From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty. Liberty, Texas, that is. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Be there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And imagine that. It's 4/24/24. That sort of thing just amuses me a little. All right, let's get things officially started with...
The Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or naga nuggets. You get to make the call. Good one here from ancient philosopher and politician Plato, who said, good people don't need laws to tell them to act responsibly, while bad people will find a way around the laws. Yeah, bad people in this case, synonymous with politicians.
A man who can't be bribed, can't be trusted.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the big blogcast.
Twisted history.
Oh, my.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, I know.
Some cool, some not so cool. Okay. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Hey, there you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1913. The Woolworth Building in New York City was opened, and it stood as the world's tallest building until 1930. Not too shabby. And it was on this day in 1955, the Bandung Conference ended, where 29 non-aligned nations of Asia and Africa finished a meeting that condemned colonialism, racism, and the Cold War. Man, that was 69 years ago. They condemned colonialism, racism, and the Cold War. And look at all the progress we've made since then.
I don't think that's funny.
I would love to see a poll, a real comprehensive poll of American people and whether or not they trust our elected officials. And I'd like to see the poll broken down on the local level, the regional level, say county, state level, and then the national level. Do you trust our elected officials? It's so hard to follow this stuff. I'm kind of a news junkie. I kind of have to be to do this blogcast every day. And even though it's a 30-minute blogcast, just to come up with material to fill that 30 minutes sometimes, I've got to do so much reading. I wonder how these guys who do three-hour talk shows every day manage to do it. Of course, there's a lot of repetition there. I mean, I almost know what Sean Hannity's going to say on his radio show before he says it. But nonetheless, as the political game continues to shift and evolve there in Washington, the actions and the beliefs of our elected officials often come under intense scrutiny, as they should. It's when they're no longer being questioned, when they're no longer being looked at, that's when you need to worry. And recently, a link resurfaced that shed light on several controversies involving Speaker Mike Johnson and his sons. Now, let's not forget, we're approaching things from a conservative standpoint, and these controversies raise some pretty big questions about integrity and values of our elected officials. Now, thanks to several sources, not the least of which is an outfit called thepoliticalglobe.com, we're going to be able to look into some of these controversies and see how see what kind of an impact they have on Speaker Johnson's reputation and his political career. Now, one of the most concerning controversies involves a photo that resurfaced showing Johnson's sons wearing Confederate flag shirts. Now, this image sparked a fair amount of outrage, as you can imagine, among many who saw it as a display of support for a symbol of hate and racism. Now, from a conservative point of view, this is a clear case of liberals trying to paint a conservative leader in a negative light, right? And you'd be justified in coming up with that conclusion. After all, the Confederate flag is a part of our history and heritage, and wearing it doesn't automatically make someone a racist. But it's certainly not beyond the realm of logic to draw that conclusion, right? Now, in addition to the Confederate flag controversy, Speaker Johnson and his sons have also faced backlash for their involvement with a controversial fraternity that's been accused of hazing and promoting misogyny. And while these allegations haven't been proven, They've raised some concerns about the values and character of Speaker Johnson's sons and, by association, their father. Naturally. So as conservatives, we got to question the motives behind these accusations and not simply accept them as truth without concrete evidence. Now, we've been scratching our head the last couple of days over the votes that have been taken regarding budgeting and how much money is going to Ukraine. And I thought we on the right were trying to stop this endless flow of money to Ukraine. It is breaking the nation's bank. And we thought at the beginning that Mike Johnson was against all this funding for Ukraine. Well, turns out he's not, apparently. Because how many billions of dollars did they just send over there? Something like $80 billion. So there surfaced another controversy that's been brought to light, and it's his involvement in a real estate deal that some have deemed as unethical. See, as a lawyer, Johnson should be well-versed in ethical practices, right? That would be a logical conclusion. And any accusations of wrongdoing should be taken seriously. But from a conservative standpoint, it's important to remember that these accusations haven't been proven and could potentially be politically motivated to discredit a conservative leader. And when it comes to discrediting conservatives, nobody does it better than Democrats. And they're usually somebody with a name that's not familiar to us. They dig this stuff up and then it goes to another person and another person and another person. And then all of a sudden you hear these accusations and eventually they turn into prosecutions, indictments and prosecutions. So despite these controversies, it's important to bear in mind that Johnson's also been a strong advocate for conservative values and policies. And he's been a vocal supporter of traditional marriage. Also a supporter of the Second Amendment and religious liberty. So, we can't overlook the positive contributions that Johnson's made and focus solely on these controversies that may have been blown out of proportion. We don't know. But in light of these controversies, it's important for Speaker Johnson to address them and provide transparency to the public. Because I'm wondering now, the way the vote went, I mean, which we were all stunned by his pushing the vote as it turned out. And so now you have to wonder, is somebody blackmailing the guy? What about the photos of his sons with the Confederate, the Stars and Bars shirts? Is somebody strong-arming him? Is somebody threatening him? See, so we need to look into this. So these controversies surrounding Speaker Mike Johnson and his sons may be of concern, but here again, as conservatives, we've got to approach them with caution, and we can't allow them to cloud our judgment. Got to consider the possible motives behind these accusations and give Johnson the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise. And as always, it's important to stand by our conservative values and principles and never let the opposing side's attempts to discredit us to sway us. After all, controversy is nothing new in politics, and it's how we handle it that truly matters. Again, it's not what life dishes out to you, it's how we react to it. My thanks to the Epoch Times and Alan Stein over there for the details in this. This is a riveting story. I don't know if you've been following it. I haven't said anything about it on the podcasts here lately because just wasn't anything to report. It looked like a big impasse, and that's exactly what happened out there in that trial after 3 days of deliberation and being sent back twice by the judge. The jury has reached an intractable impasse. No verdict at all in the trial of George Allen Kelly. Now, Judge Thomas Fink declared a mistrial, and this was on Monday, and set a status hearing for April 29th, in which the prosecution will either move to schedule a retrial or move to dismiss the case. And this is going to be riveting, this part right here, waiting for that decision. Now, Mr. Kelly faced one charge of second-degree murder or manslaughter or negligent homicide, an additional charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon in the shooting death of Mexican national Gabriel Quen Bitamilla, who's an illegal immigrant who was on Mr. Kelly's ranch. Now, the defense lawyer, Kathy Lothorp, after the judge declared a mistrial, said, it's a victory. It's the second best answer, not guilty, and then a mistrial. So either way, it's a win, not just the perfect win. Okay, well, I can go along with that. Definitely not a perfect win. But lead defense lawyer, Brenna Larkin, said the state has 60 days now to call a new trial or dismiss the case. And that's the riveting part right there. So now we have to wait this thing out. And Brenna says, we'll know on Monday. Okay. And that's referring to next Monday, April 29th hearing. So George Allen Kelly, he appeared relieved after the mistrial decision, saying he had big plans. He says, I'm going home tonight, going to bed. Now, his wife, Wanda Kelly, apparently was very frustrated with this, but lamented 15 months of our lives, she said, had been spent defending her husband against the charges. And Ms. Larkin said last week, if ever there was a case where reasonable doubt existed, it's this particular case. I can only imagine how much money they've had to spend so far in the defense of their property. Because that's what that comes down to. This is not just the defense of Mr. Kelly, but it's also the defense of his property. Now, a guilty verdict for second-degree murder in Arizona would have sent Mr. Kelly away to prison for 10 to 22 years. So, given his age, that works out to a potential life sentence. It would be 7 to 21 years for a conviction of manslaughter and 1 to 3 and 3 quarters years for negligent homicide. Now, 8 jurors, 5 men and 3 women deliberated while 4 others served as alternatives. I would love to have been a fly on the wall in that jury room. On the second day of deliberations, which was April 19th, the jury delivered a note to Judge Fink stating that they were at an impasse in reaching a verdict. And after consulting with attorneys on both sides, the judge instructed the jury to do your best and just keep deliberating until they could deliberate no further. And he said the case deserved more than 7 hours of weighing volumes of exhibits and witness testimony. He may have had a point there on that. But Wanda Kelly spent weeks inside the courtroom, sitting in the front spectator section to be close to her husband, Mr. Kelly, who is now 75. And after 4 weeks of listening to daily testimony, glued to the same blue folding vinyl seat, the wear and tear of her husband's murder trial was showing in her eyes. But she remained optimistic. And she said in a wavering voice, while wrapped in a white sweater, she says, I think I see the light at the end of the tunnel. Says it feels like it's getting close to the end. It's a relief. George doesn't have the heart or the spirit to shoot anybody, which I believe. You ever looked at the guy? You ever seen any of the video from this? You may not have seen much. Again, I'm a news junkie. I get a lot of stuff that you'll never see. And he just looks like a kindly gentleman. But the kind of a man who has the resolution to protect his property and protect the lives of the people who are members of his family, as well as people who work for him on his property. So, yeah. Mrs. Kelly said to the person seated next to her, she says, George doesn't have the heart or the spirit to shoot anybody. But the facts are in dispute, and the fact she dreads most is the hardest to bear. And then she said, but the Lord's going to decide heaven or hell. Well, I guarantee you this, if Mr. Kelly ends up in prison with any term at age 75, that's a life sentence. So on April 18th, that was the end of last week, prosecution and defense lawyers in their final arguments urged a dozen jurors in Santa Cruz County Superior Court to weigh all the facts and use common sense to reach a fair and just verdict. Now, prosecutor Michael Jetty said that on January 30th, 2023, the defendant, without provocation, shot an AK-47 rifle at 2 unarmed illegal immigrant men who were walking on his property, killing Mexican national Gabriel Quen Bitamia, who was 48 years old. Now, it's an unusual case, according to observers, given that there's little or no direct physical evidence linking the defendant to the firearm used in the shooting. And that is where the plot thickens. defense attorney, Ms. Larkin, and the Kellys in their retirement years were living in fear. And as a result, Mr. Kelly made the decision to arm himself and protect his life, his wife, and his property. You know, we still have to support property owners and their right to protect their property. Anyhow, the presence of armed drug traffickers wasn't a figment of the defendant's imagination. Border Patrol had stated in earlier testimony that it's impossible now to tell the difference between illegal immigrants and drug smugglers just by their appearance alone. And she said Border Patrol cameras were effective only some of the time, and the people who engage in illegal activity knew where to hide on a property as vast as the Kellys. So there's a lot that goes unseen by Border Patrol. Ultimately, something does happen on January 30th. Ms. Larkin said, Mr. Kelly is in his kitchen eating lunch. It's a day like any other. He's been out and about on his ranch. He's planning to do some more chores for the rest of the day. He has no idea that he's about to be in a life or death situation. He doesn't ask for it. He's minding his own business in his own house when suddenly he sees something. He sees people carrying rifles and backpacks out the kitchen window. That's what he's seeing out his kitchen window. And he does the right thing. He calls law enforcement. He's not some vigilante who decides he's going to take matters completely into his own hands. He calls for help. He calls the guy who has the badge and the gun. She said he called after he heard a shot and told Border Patrol he might have to return fire. Now, Ms. Larkin said this is not a mystery shot as the state describes. This is a real shot. Mr. Kelly hears it, and the whole situation completely changes at that moment. It's frightening, scary situations. People flee, people freeze, or people act. And Mr. Kelly acted. Now put yourself in his shoes with that description that I just gave you. What would you have done? How would you have reacted? Would your heart suddenly drop down into your stomach, realizing that somebody's trespassing on your property and they're shooting? I mean, it's not a hard concept for me to wrap my brain around. And because of the failure of investigators to locate the victim's body during a first search of Kelly's property, they're left with questions. That was a point that Ms. Larkin made. She says, we don't know if Gabriel Q and Butamia's body was there when law enforcement arrived. It's a question that's outstanding. We don't know the answers to it. And now we never will. So Mr. Kelly eventually discovered the victim lying face down as he went to check on his horse later in the evening. And rather than try to conceal the evidence, Ms. Larkin said the defendant called Border Patrol, which is what you're supposed to do. Good solid citizen here, apparently. And she then said to the jury, what would a guilty person do? What would someone who's come across this body who thinks, I probably shot this guy, what would a guilty person do in Alan's shoes? So she continues. She says a guilty person had every opportunity to cover this up, and he would have been able to do so effectively. That's not what Alan did. He does the right thing because it's the right thing. Great point. And Mr. Kelly discovered the victim clad in tactical boots, tan pants, a black hooded sweatshirt, and a camouflage jacket. Does that sound like somebody who's looking for a better life in a new country? I mean, it doesn't to me. And then crime scene photos show that the victim was carrying a partially unzipped camouflage backpack that contained food and water. He also had a fanny pack with a broken buckle near his chest, a cell phone, and a two-way handheld radio tucked in his waistband. And his clenched right fist was over his chest, a twig and grass between the fingers. Now, on a single image extracted from the victim's cell phone, he wore similar clothing, a fanny pack on his chest, and binoculars around his neck. Now, great point here. Ms. Larkin said in closing, she says, this is not somebody who's looking for the American dream. There's no evidence this person is here for benign purposes. All the evidence points in the other direction. Now, would it be a logical assumption, or at least a logical theory, that perhaps this guy was working for one of the drug cartels? Why not? So for the prosecution, ballistics experts had testified that they were unable to determine whether Mr. Kelly's rifle was the weapon that fired the fatal shot. But the evidence did suggest that the The unrecovered bullet likely came from a high-powered rifle from the direction of the defendant's east-facing ranch house, 116 yards from where the victim's body was found. Well, a medical examiner told the jury that the autopsy couldn't place the exact time of death because of a number of variables, including that the victim's body was stored in a freezer before the autopsy. The medical conclusion was that the victim died of a perforating gunshot wound to the right side, traveling upward, smashing three ribs, severing the man's aorta, and damaging lung tissue before exiting the chest. So with injuries like that, it's very unlikely that the victim could have gotten very far. And that's according to the forensic pathologist's testimony. Now, Mr. Jetty said the circumstantial evidence is sufficiently compelling to place Mr. Kelly's guilt beyond reasonable doubt, which I think is pure BS. But then again, that's what a prosecutor does when he's grasping at straws. And Mr. Jetty was certainly grasping at straws. He told the jury in closing, too, again, this is the prosecutor, this guy Jetty. He says, the moral of the story is that Mr. Kelly shot and a man is dead. Well, okay, maybe that's the case, but what was the motivation behind shooting the guy? See, Kelly heard shots on his property by people who were not invited to be on his property. I mean, apparently Arizona doesn't have a castle law. I don't know. So anyhow, Mrs. Kelly looked at her husband sitting at the defense table beside his two attorneys wearing a beige vest, button-down shirt, and blue jeans, looked like an ordinary, solid citizen. And just minutes earlier, Mrs. Kelly had jokingly wondered aloud how differently things might have been if she and her husband had stayed in Montana. Well, Mrs. Kelly, I don't know if this is going to be of any consolation to you, but eventually people in Montana are going to be experiencing some similar problems unless we do something about securing our borders. But instead, they invested in a dream, which was to live out their golden years on a cozy ranch nestled near the U.S.-Mexico border in Arizona. And Mrs. Kelly chuckled as she recalled how much less complicated their lives had been in Lincoln, Montana. She said that during those working years, Mrs. Kelly had been a teacher in a rural two-room schoolhouse. Imagine that. And her hubby, a state fisheries biologist, provided for the family until his retirement. He was a college-educated man, and she said that her confidant and protector, a man's man who could handle a firearm but always put safety first. So together, the couple ran a successful hunting lodge on the Crow Indian Reservation before moving to Arizona in the early 2000s. And she recalled that life was good in Montana during those 40 years. But she and her husband, both North Carolina natives, had made a deal years earlier when she told him, I'll live with you in Montana, but you got to move to Arizona. And he agreed. If you've ever seen a Montana winter, believe me, you would choose Arizona. And again, none of this would be happening if our politicians would secure our borders and back up the American people in our right to bear arms and protect our properties. Again, this goes back to that Walt Kelly line I keep reciting. We have met the enemy, and he is us. I'm not really following the Donald Trump hush money trial because it is what it is, and it's a dog and pony show, but thought it was rather interesting that jurors Monday heard opening statements in the trial from the prosecution and Trump's attorneys, and the trial stems, of course, from the allegation that Trump paid Stephanie Clifford, a porn star who goes by the moniker Stormy Daniels, to keep quiet about their alleged affair and stop the National Enquirer from running a story about it. Well, Trump has repeatedly denied the affair occurred. Now, while addressing jury members, prosecutor Matthew Colangelo lied to jurors by stating that Trump, quote, orchestrated a criminal scheme to corrupt the 2016 presidential election by paying Clifford. Huh? I mean, that's not even an allegation. That is an outright lie. So Colangelo who's Alvin Bragg's top prosecutor, is reportedly a former Biden appointee of the Justice Department, right? So the Biden administration continues to claim this is not a politically motivated attack against Trump. But you have to wonder if anybody, anywhere, is buying that anymore. I mean, gee whiz. So, there are also reports that he's a left-wing activist, this guy Colangelo, and has been for years. Gee, I thought the justice system was supposed to be blind, right? Apparently not. And Trump's defense claims the case is baseless and should have never been presented in the first place. Whether that's the case or not, I don't even know. I don't even care. Because it's the economy, stupid! I don't care what Trump has done or what he is alleged to have done. I don't care what he said in a locker room setting. I want him back in the White House to straighten out the economy, straighten out the standing of this nation in the world, straighten out our diplomatic difficulties around the world. We are on the threshold of World War III, and the economy is going to grass, and nobody's doing anything about it in the current administration. The border's wide open. You want me to care about Donald Trump's locker room talk? Boy. Now, I wish I had the time to follow these trials, but I don't. And there may be a way to stop the Biden administration's show trials, but I don't know. Anyhow, this lie on the part of this guy Colangelo is just, it's a it's a doozy. It's just, I mean, it's not, I want to make this perfectly clear. So pardon me for repeating this. It is not an allegation that he made. It's an outright lie. And in the American judicial system, you can't do that. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and Timon Ship.
You guys readers? Do you like to read? Thank you. Oh, I'm so glad to hear that you like to read. You know, because, you know, some people, you know, especially young people scare me. Because they sit back. Guy saw me reading the book, said, "What you got there, Ship?" I said, "A book." He said, "You read, bro?" "Yes, I do." I said, "Do you read?" "No, reading's boring." I said, "Yeah, we're in trouble. We're in trouble." So I'm reading. Did you hear what they put out? That the 10 most dangerous foods you can eat while driving. What do you guys think? Throw me out some food you think would be dangerous. What is that? Say what?
Raisins.
Raisins? What?
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
Ribs.
Rib. Hey, there you go. Number one on the list, ribs. They had a brother near Northern California, 10-car pileup, ribs all over the freeway. Three of them down his throat. You can't dip ribs and drive. But that wasn't what blew me away. What blew me away was number two on the list, French fries. Can you imagine you're driving in your car, you're flying, you're moving, and you're eating your French fries. All of a sudden, one of them drops down between your legs. And now you got a whole bag of fries here, but you want that one fry that just keeps easing up under your butt. You just want that fry. I don't know why you want that fry. Now you're doing 75 miles an hour, and you got a whole bag of fries right here, but you don't want that fry. You want that one fry that you're working to hit the gas and then go, and you don't want them to find you this way, because if they did, they'd go, "Well, there you go. They wanted that fry." Let it go. It will be warm later, and you can eat it. Because it's been sitting up under your butt. But people forget about food. We love to eat. But everybody can't cook. You agree? Yeah. You been to work? Go to those potluck dinners? And that casserole surprise is sitting in the corner? Now, if it comes out of the oven green, you know you shouldn't eat this. If the dog won't eat it, that should tell you something. "I'm not eating that. Don't bring that to me." "No, no. The dog is telling you not gonna eat." And you know it's bad when someone's eating that casserole of surprise and you have to take all of your clothes off to go to the bathroom. Ooh, it's so hot in here. Oh, my. Wow. Ooh. And you're sweating. You know. A casserole surprise. Don't eat it. If that's the case, give it to your supervisor. Take him out.
That's it. Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.